Welcome to this week's podcast of Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. Hey, Cindy, take it away.
And hello out there. Welcome back to Kicking It with Kidneys, a forum to discuss important topics for suppressed voices within the dialysis community. During our previous podcast, the panelists and I discussed basic tests such as estimated glomerular filtration rate, commonly known as eGFR, which measures how well your kidneys are working, creatinine, which measures how much creatinine or waste products, if you will, is filtered out of your kidneys, and other lab values such as hemoglobin and potassium. There are other factors as well, such as age, race, gender, appetite, and a host of other diagnostic information used by your doctor to determine your kidney function. So, joining us today is IWK panel, Marion Wilson, Maria Jimenez, Rita Williams, Sarita Scarborough, and BJ Simone. So BJ, what is the word on the street?
Okay. Well, last week, our word on the street participants had a difficult time answering our question, but things are very different this week. Our participants have definite answers that are thought-provoking, and I'm sure will spark some interesting discussion. So let's take a listen.
Word on the street with Simone.
Hey, Simone. We are here today, and we're talking to people, and we ask them, do you have a family member on dialysis, and do you consider it a generational curse? Here's what they said.
I don't have any family members on dialysis, to my knowledge. And I believe that that could be affiliated with generational curses. Yes, I believe that it could be.
No, I don't have a family member that's on dialysis. And no, I don't believe that it is a generational curse. I had a family member that was on dialysis. And it was because it was my grandmother, and because she had diabetes, and of all of those years of her blood sugars going up and down and up and down and being high, I guess most of the time, it caused her kidneys to fail and she had to go on dialysis. But I don't think I've had anybody else in the family who has been on dialysis.
I don't think it's generational. I think that to try to stick them with a generation is a misapplication of what is occurring. You've got something occurring in the population at the level that it is today because of some reasons. And it has nothing to do with just time. What time can do, time can worsen situations. Because you didn't, if you were supposed to take care of some shit early on and you wait until it's very late, you may have problems. Something is occurring. How do you stop this from occurring in this fashion? What happens after it occurs in several generations? That becomes not some supernatural generational shit that becomes something you let persist. You can always stop shit that is persisting, but you got to concentrate. How do I stop this shit? And often we have not we've not gathered enough evidence to create a solution to the problems we have.
Well, all right, BJ.
Well, I respect their comments. You have to admit, it makes you think. And I started thinking, I had a family member who was on dialysis, and her mother succumbed to kidney disease. And I have to admit, there were some lifestyle factors there. But then the question remains, were those lifestyle factors influenced by generational deficits?
You know, last week, BJ, you articulated a few quotes from a book titled Brainwashed, I believe, by Tom Burrell. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
So I purchased a copy. Now, it was very informative and so thought-provoking that I decided to do some self-evaluation myself. As a healthcare provider and African-American by way of the Caribbean, okay, I too fell into the racial reprogramming and negative propaganda that the prominence of chronic kidney disease necessitating dialysis within communities of color resulted from non-compliance. So guess what, gang? Today, we will discuss the disproportion of kidney disease within minority groups such as African-Americans, Hispanics, and Native Americans. And the question is the assumption that renal failure is a self-inflicted disease with generational curses true or false? Let me repeat this. Is the assumption that renal failure, a self-inflicted disease with generational curses true or false? So we're going to start, let's start with Marion and Maria, okay? So what are some of the behaviors that you guys have noted within communities of color that directly influence the diagnosis of renal failure? Okay, can you guys give me some information about that?
Go ahead, Maria.
Okay, so basically what I would say is based off of experience and seeing the patient population, we do have familial patients. We have patients that are cousins. We have patients that are sisters that are actually on dialysis. There are also patients that have younger siblings that are pre-renal. So based off of, you know, medical practices and what we've seen in the medical community with dialysis, we can say that it is, you know, I don't want to call it a curse, but it is consistent with genetics. I can say that.
And I would take it a step further and say that some of it is misinformation that is passed from generation to generation as well.
Okay. Did you guys notice that our respondents, now let me give you some statistics here. Okay.
Respondent was real. I can say that.
Yeah.
He said, stop the shit.
Well, and I could agree with him, but there's a real problem here. As far as, self-cure is concerned, African Americans are approximately 13% of the population, but yet 35% diagnosis with end-stage renal disease. So obviously there's a disconnect because, as you can see, the respondents didn't know of very many people that were on dialysis, and I would beg to differ. What do you guys think?
I'm with Maria and Miriam. I think we see a lot of family members that have other family members. Like Maria mentioned, I've worked with a mother and son in the same unit. I mean, they would provide transportation for each other. And then they had another brother that was getting ready to come on to dialysis. So, yeah, I'm with you. I would beg to differ that this is not a family curse.
So will I say it's everyone? No.
No.
If you're a patient that's on dialysis, will your children be on dialysis? Possibly, but not necessarily.
If we change some of those eating habits and change some of our and modify some of our behaviors, they may not be.
Well, therein lies the problem, Rita. You know, I think this stems all the way back from what we were taught from that boat ride that we took over here how many centuries ago. Okay. Yeah. So, BJ, explain generational identifiers and how this term has plagued minorities with all kinds of negative propaganda throughout our history.
Well, okay. First of all, I think there is a legacy. There's a legacy of slavery and specifically as it relates to African Americans, but there's a legacy of oppression as it relates to other minority groups. And when people are, I truly believe when people are given better options, they make better choices. When you have people who are struggling every day just to be accepted as an equal member of the society, which is one of those generational identifiors that minority people of minority status share, no matter which group they belong. And I think that the environment has a great impact on your life chances. So when you think of generational identifiers, those are things that people inherit due to their membership in a group. And it has nothing to do with their own personal actions. There are things that influence them. And so,
that's you're saying these are long-term effects from, these are residual effects from our history.
These are residual effects from systemic oppression. Okay. And that's okay. All groups.
All right. So Rita.
Barclay, I got a story for you.
Okay, what's going
you,
on?
You know where I was. I was at Walmart doing some research, but this was for some patio furniture pillows.
Okay.
Nothing to do with, you know, the other stuff.
Okay.
Well, my sister and I went to Walmart. We really needed some pillows for the backyard for our furniture. So we popped into Walmart and we were walking down the aisle, the garden aisle, and we were just talking away in Spanish, just having a good old day sister talk. And I kept hearing this little voice that they should speak American. We're in America.
Uh-oh.
And I said, no, sister, that's not for us, right? And I said, okay, well, we kept shopping and I heard it again. And I said, and I had my mask on because I was at Walmart and I'm following the rules because I'm taking care of me and everyone, right? You know, I snatched
American.
That.
Taking care of them Americans, the mother Americans.
Right.
Okay, all right. Okay.
So I took off my mask. I said, ma'am, are you speaking to us? She says, well, who else is on the aisle? I said, well, there is no one else on the aisle but these two Latino women. I said, is that something you really want to do? And I said, well, I said, first of all, we don't speak American in America. We speak English.
That's right.
I said, but we're a melting pot, so we speak a lot of languages in America. Over 350 languages could be spoken in America. So I choose to speak my native tongue, Spanish. Is it bothering you? Well, yeah, you're in America. You need to speak English. And she corrected herself because she was not the sharpest tool in the shed. So I was like, sister, is she talking to me? And she was like, yeah. I said, wrong person to talk to, lady. Not today, not today. I said, not today. I said, what's your problem, ma'am? Is it because you don't speak two languages or three languages? Many people speak many languages, and that's what it should be. We're a melting pot.
Yeah.
So I had never been privy to this before. I had heard about this.
Uh-huh.
But I hadn't been privy to a Karen in Walmart.
Karen.
A Karen in Walmart.
So propaganda and relabeling, because again, you are an American. You were born here.
I was born here.
Okay.
I mean, I was waiting for her to ask me where my papers were. And I was going to have to look for them because I don't know what paper she wants.
Well,
papers.
She got you riled up. So while you're on it, Rita, what are some of the destructive propagandas verbalized about Hispanics that prove to be an incubator for supporting and trivializing the economic disparities that exist within your race today?
Well, that we're here to take everybody's jobs. I don't know what jobs you want us to take because it's construction, restaurants, landscaping, working out in the crops or livestock. I mean, I don't know many Americans that want to work on the pig farm when it's 150 degrees outside or pick grapes in the agricultural farms. I don't know.
And how are the benefits with those?
Oh, those are great benefits. We get paid below minimum wage. And hopefully we do get paid sometimes, you know, when Americans are making minimum wage that could be. I mean, it's not a livable wage in my term, but it is minimum wage. But we may get $5 for a crate of grapes that we pick, and we have to work all day. Oh, and the benefits are great. The insurance is great, too. I forgot to tell y'all that. We don't get any. We don't get any. We have to rely on maybe community or the community clinics that we still have to pay for out of pocket, or we have to go to doctors that take cash and we go there, or we don't go to the doctor.
Okay, so Sarita, how are you with me? Can you hear
me? Yes, I am.
Okay, so we carry the stigma and yet of yet another debilitating disparity, but have no real economic incentives to create positive tools to help erase the negative propaganda and mental manipulations, you know, that we face on a day-to-day basis. How do we erase the past, or can we erase the past, or how do we work? I mean, how do we have a meaningful financial presence in order to basically help people that look like us, okay, become healthier?
Well, I think we've been talking about this just in a different sense. And one of the problems is that when we look at it, we talk about generational curses. The issue is, I'm listening to the stories of the siblings who are going on dialysis. Now, my first comment would be, if the mother and the son have it and another brother's about to come on, they probably have all eaten the same food during their lifetime. So we go right back to food and healthy eating. The problem is that there's a difference between the meat that you're gonna find in a Walmart versus a Whole Foods. And I'm using meat as an example because in that particular instance, it's a percentage of water that's injected into the meat and the colorization. We could say that about other stores as well. So, you know, how do we change the cycle? We have to change the diet. And in many cases where we are meat people, just because that's what we've become, we may look to move towards a more plant-based diet and vegetables that were grown. I mean, growing up, everybody's
okay, hold on. You know, you and I always get into it over stuff like this.
Well, I was going to ask you what happened after you read that book, because you said you evaluated yourself, and I was going to ask what were the results, but I was going to wait till after we got offline.
Well, the results are that I myself have been conditioned to think like my counterparts, to think that African Americans and Latinos have put themselves in this situation because they want to be in this situation, okay? And that's because maybe I can afford a little better. But when you're talking about plant-based diet, you're talking about people that live in the projects, that live in the wards and other places. Where in the dickens are they gonna be able to grow a garden, okay? And who has time to grow a garden when you got five kids at home? See, this is what got me. This is why I had to do a self-evaluation. And I thank BJ for that book, because I'm thinking, are you one of those that have gotten so high and mighty that you've forgotten your past, where you came from, your people, okay? Because it wasn't always like this. My mama didn't have what I have, okay? So that's why I'm glad that I read the book, okay? And I guess, BJ, what is it that has the system manipulated the long-term effects of slavery to be perceived as a self-induced problem? Is that what I'm suffering with, or America is suffering with? Can you explain that to me?
Well, one of the things that I thought about too, and certainly as we anticipated this topic, I think it's helpful to look at how other people might look at something. So I want to just, you know, before I answer your question, I want to play devil's advocate, because obviously my position is that environmental influences do have an effect on our behavior, our actions, and our life chances. That's my bottom line belief. But I have to think about what other people who truly are convinced that it's a self-inflicted illness.
Okay.
And so the question is, so playing devil's advocate, some people believe, because one of the things I think we tend to promote on this podcast is education. We say people have to be educated. But there are people who believe there's already enough education. There's education at the health center. There's education from your providers. There's education in the school. So the fact is that people who end up having these kinds of diseases, especially if there's been another family member who's had it before. So you see the firsthand account of what being on dialysis is about, you know. So then that kind of says, well, yeah, it's self-inflicted. They might even think that if we say that kidney failure comes from unmanaged other illness, particularly diabetes and high blood pressure. Well, if those illnesses carry with them certain consequences, wouldn't that be enough for you to want to manage that so that it doesn't get to kidney failure? And then the other thing is, people who truly believe this is self-inflicted might even think, I can't make people take their medicine. I can't make them eat healthy. Even if the food is there, I can't make them eat healthy food. If you are in a situation where you get your food from a food bank, the assumption would be that they're not passing out unhealthy food. So you already have.
But they are. They're passing out whatever comes to them free. That's what they're giving away. But they
granted, but the concept of people like you said, and who don't know, who are completely cut off from the experience that other people might have to, you know, in their daily existence. So the assumption is that this is America, you're getting the food, this is America, you're getting the information, and the choices that you make are purely your own, especially if they are preventative, or they can be prevented. My question is, how do you address that? How much of that is false? How much of that is true?
So Marion and Maria, based on Mary, Maria, Rita, anybody chime in anytime you'd like. So based on what you guys see on a day-to-day basis with patients coming in from all different walks of life, is it a self-inflicted, self-induced disease? Okay. Or do you think that these are remnants from the past?
Hey. I couldn't wait to speak on this, okay?
All right.
Because I've lived it. My mother, my sister, both were on dialysis. And some of it, of course, was a large part of it was due to choices. But a part of it was due to just lack of information, lack of resources. For example, you know, we're from the deep south. We're from deep in Mississippi. And so my mother being the oldest of 12 children, there just wasn't a lot available. So what was available is what was consumed and habits formed. Mm-hmm. Those habits were passed down to us. Mm-hmm. So do I believe that it's self-inflicted? I don't think it's self-inflicted. To me, that carries a negative connotation, that is, these are choices that I have willingly made to harm myself. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I don't believe it's self-inflicted. I truly feel that it's largely due to misinformation.
And generational curses. What about generational curses?
I don't like that term.
Okay. No.
But let me tell you why I like that term.
Okay.
Remember, the food, the crumbs from the master's table was the intestines of the pig.
Right.
They call that chitlins, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
I do it too.
Okay. You see what I mean? You see? Even you saying that is good. You see what I'm trying to say? But when you
look at it.
Yeah. Well, okay. But the
we chicharrones, they're part of the pig too. They're pretty good with a tortilla.
Right. So what I'm trying to say is that if you have a child and you bring that child up as a vegetarian, okay, that child is not going to like anything but the pig. That child is not going to like it. And it's not going to hurt that child. Okay. So what I'm trying to say is that I hear what you're saying and I agree. And that's the whole topic of the conversation today. Is it self-inflicted or not? Based on what I'm hearing, you got a 50-50 chance here, because the bottom line of it is, this is what you were taught in your home. You are a product of your society.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
You know? So
choices. Choices.
Well, I think if, you know, I agree that, you know, if you're raised on eating a certain way, you know, that's how you are. But with the education comes change. When you know better, you do better. We've said that before. So, you know, holidays, Christmas, Thanksgiving, that type of stuff, church events, pastors' anniversaries, all this other stuff. We got to take the ham hocks out the greens and use smoked turkey, an alternative or something like that. So it's not necessarily a generational curse that it's going to happen to you, but it's happening around you. You've been given the education to make those changes. Act on it. Action.
Okay, Sarita. Well, how do we flip the script, my dear? I mean, they're talking like it's easy for them, for people to make healthy food choices, okay? And you know, there's no one-on-one situation where you and I can go into a home, preferably you, okay, to give people a budget and say, this is what you have to buy. How do we flip the script on this? And is it a little bit deeper than what Maria, I, Marion, or most of us are saying? What is your take on it?
Well, and again, I think this was a recommendation or I think a point of reality that I mentioned in a previous episode. You're going to lose some generations. And so your exact approach is going to have to be at the K first, second, third grade level. You're going to have to start reprogramming in a different light. And all of those who are before the youngsters that are going to elementary school may become lost in the process. And in some instances, they may be able to go home and teach their parents a better way of eating. You know, one thing I can tell you, growing up, I went to a high school that was right by the projects. And for us, it was normal to see the little bit of yard people had growing their food. When we look at people like my grandmother, they all die of something. But no matter what the income status was, everybody had a little garden somewhere. Now we have community gardens. We also have, what is it called? Where you go and you buy your vegetables at the
farmer's market.
And those are inexpensive ways of getting fresh products to the table. And in some organizations even do co-ops. And so I think it's going to take all of those things to help change the diet. And I agree with Maria. Well, you know, you got to get the ham hocks out. You can't do salt pork, but that's what makes it taste good to people. But it cannot be done in excess. You know, I don't think I'd be happy living in a bubble if everything I just couldn't have. But what happens is we take it to the extreme. And so when we talk about affordability, these are how we start looking for affordable, healthy products that may offer a different outcome.
What are your thoughts about, I gotta die something, so I'm just gonna go ahead and do this, because again, the cost. So you're talking about you're gonna die of something. In the meantime, you're in the hospital, and to taxpayers, okay, that bill is just going up and up and up. And listen, we're not the ones that's benefiting from it. That's what's so sad about it, okay? We got all of these healthcare disparities, and we're not benefiting by that because the tab that's going up is not being put in our pockets. Your analysis?
Well, Ms. Barkley, you know I've been disfellowshipped. And so I'm just going to tell you, I love the Lord, and I believe when your time comes, it comes. Now, we can argue about taking care of people in the hospitals, but I can raise that same issue with taking care of people in prisons. And what is their functional contribution to society? So now we're looking at who is more functional. So I think it's choose your poison. And in many cases, you have people in prison that you're taking care of 24/7, 365 that are on dialysis as well. So they're costing even more.
We're gonna have a segment on that in the future. We're gonna have a segment on that. Go ahead.
They're costing even more than the person who goes and gets a treatment through the emergency room. And again, this is the way the society has been set up. When Rita tells the story of people who are essential to the economy getting products to the table, and they're not even afforded health care, are we saying that they shouldn't be entitled to go into the emergency room and get a treatment, even though it's costing us? I think we need to talk to some senators and some congresspeople and really deal with this, because what we have is a group of individuals who really don't want to see anybody have health care unless they're paying for it themselves. And we know that that's not a sustainable solution.
Well, Rita, I'm back to you, sweetie. And the situation was so unfortunate that you went through.
Karen?
Yeah, Karen was so unfortunate. Because if I'm not mistaken, didn't you tell me your grandfather said that?
Oh, yeah. We didn't cross the border. The border crossed us.
Yeah, so you were
I've been here. My family's been here for generations. I don't know what Karen was talking about and what papers, because I'm still looking for those papers.
Yeah. So
I got bills. I got, you know, whatever. Oh,
not only that, you have your degrees from college, from your master's.
8 years. 8 years that my daddy paid with his sweat.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
yes, yes.
He didn't have a college education.
No. Barely an elementary education, but he made sure all his 8 children had college degrees.
Yeah. So we contribute so much, Sarita, and yet the door keeps being closed. How are we going to get a seat at that table? What do we need to do? Or, you know, like I said,
who's closing the door?
Well, now when you track
with Karen,
she said Karen.
Karen and her husband.
Okay, but I'm going back to the reality of the door is closed in that when we do receive any type of residuals from the contracts, I mean, they're just crumbs, okay? They're just crumbs. And the programs that we had so many years ago, even with during my generation, they're no longer there. You know, the term now is that we can't afford it, but yet African-Americans, first of all, Latinos put in over $1 trillion a year into the economy. African-Americans put in $2 trillion. And listen, I got a COVID update for you. I know Ms. Marion wants to do it, but I'm going to do it today. Okay. Out of the 45% of the vaccinations that have occurred in the United States so far, guess what percentage is African-American? 8 to 9% out of that 45%. And let me give you another statistic. Okay. We have every disparity known to man. Sarita, have we been mentally conditioned to accept the worst? I mean, is that a condition?
I don't know that we've been mentally conditioned. I would tend to think that it's more an issue of opportunity. And I appreciate you and your sound effects today. I like that. Can you do that again? Thing. But I think this is it's part political, number one, and the other side of it is
a lot racial. Forget the political, okay? But what we're talking about racial.
Well, political is racial.
Well, thank you, and explain because, a little more because I'm not getting it.
Well, I mean, first of all, look who is sitting at the table making the decisions and saying what our communities need and what their ethnicities are. You know, there's this new term, and it's always interesting to me when other people find out terms and all of a sudden, in this instance, woke is a bad thing. Well, you know, it's kind of like you're misinterpreting what woke really means. And I'm okay with it if they want to misuse the term, but I think number one, we have to elect people who are going to represent us. And what we have are bodies that, you know, we kiss babies and take flags to funerals and say it flew over the White House. And then we exit and go right back to D.C. and nothing's getting
done. Okay, so let us stop you right there. So were we complacent in that? Because, again, the Supreme Court, every other court is stacked with people that are not going to necessarily vote in our favor. Okay,
but that just recently happened.
Yeah, no. See, that's where I disagree with you. That was recently verbalized. But listen, all this has been a plan long term. Okay, you know, the plan was already there. How to implement it took a minute, okay? But if we were on our guard, like we're not with our healthcare, if we were on our guard, first of all, this would have never even happened. You know,
well,
that's
you,
why
you
right
know,
now
when
they're
you
trying
don't.
To push this. You're trying to push the civil rights bill through, but yet I think the other day didn't Uncle Joe, was it the Asian rights? What was that? What was that Uncle Joe pushed through at the White House that everybody signed off on, the hate bill for
Uncle
Asians?
Joe.
What was that? Sabrina, what was that?
That was the hate bill for the Asian American community.
Okay, well, where's the civil rights bill? Where's that? Where's that at?
You got Juneteenth. You got Juneteenth. Be happy.
That's right.
See,
you
that's
only
what I'm
get
talking
one.
About. It's people that see that's what you see. That's what I'm talking about. It's people like y'all. BJ, you know what? Can I talk to you? Okay, because
well,
I don't
want
to. I want to ask a question. I've been waiting to kind of jump in there. I want to ask a question that we're talking about people of color or minorities, but I'd like to ask Marion or Maria, because you guys or even Reedy, you guys tend to have that hands-on with the patients. Mm-hmm. What about poor whites?
Mm-hmm.
What's the, mm-hmm. because if we're kind of looking at things and we say it all comes back to money and race, what about the poor whites? Because they're not having the greatest diet and their issues with other health mm-hmm. concerns with them. But no,
they're on dialysis too.
Yeah, but it's not at a disproportionate
not
level.
Not not as prominent mm-hmm. as the minorities mm-hmm. are. They're there.
Yeah.
They're
mm-hmm.
there.
So then yeah, it does come down to racial issues.
Yeah, because it's yeah. disproportionate. We're dealing with the disproportionate of healthcare disparities within primarily African Americans, okay, and Latinos.
So it's
oh,
not
I'm so
just
sorry. Native.
Economics.
Yeah.
I
yeah,
think that's
yeah.
what I'm saying. It's not just economics. Poor, if you're poor, you're poor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there are other underlying issues, which
yes.
really comes down to race.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Serena,
that's a good question.
That's a good question, Ms.
Yeah.
Okay, so whose dog is that in the back? Sounds good. Who's barking? Serena, is that your puppy?
No, mine all on lockdown and my fish has no air.
Oh. Okay. All right, you guys. So we're going to wrap this up and I'm going to need your final comments because July 13th, who are we expecting? Who is our guest going to be, BJ? Okay. Who is our guest? Mary Washington, a.k.a. what? Rapper MD.
MD.
Okay.
Ms. Barclay, I'd like to correct that date for you.
Uh-oh.
That's actually going to be aired on July the 16th.
Okay. All right. Sarita, I bet you got a kick out of that Maria corrected me. Anyway, so July the 16th, okay, it's going to be aired. Rapper MD is going to be in the house, and she's going to be talking to us about some of these disparities and how we can minimize the risk of us going on dialysis. So I'd like your final thoughts, guys, about what's going on in the world today and what we can do to help ourselves with this devastation that we have with what I would consider the appropriate terminology, brainwashed. I kind of like that by Tom Burrell. I kind of like that. What I would consider a lot of negative propaganda that's circulating about minorities and renal failure. So your last thoughts.
Well, we're not really being appropriately categorized or projected in the community. When we use terms such as self-inflicted, brainwashed, I receive those as very negative terms. We need information, we need resources, and we need to plain and simple reverse some of the actions that we have followed for generations. So this podcast serves as an opportunity to provide education. And I believe that we'll continue to reach those who need this information. So thank you.
Okay. Maria.
Basically, again, knowing better is doing better. Again, like Marian said, this is what this forum is about, getting information out to patients that are, you know, in less served communities, minority population, and put the general curse in reverse.
All right. Rita, I'm so sorry what you experienced today, but I need your final thoughts.
Please. I know. This is to my friends at Walmart, Karen. As a country of immigrants, we must understand that we need to move forward through peace, acceptance, and embracing those who are different from us. So, Karen, I love you. I love you. And welcome to America.
I love it.
The new America.
The new America. All right, BJ.
Well, my final thoughts have actually already been said. I think we're fighting on two fronts. We have to work within our communities to reverse some of the historical, if you will, curses or negative outcomes. And I think we have to, as individuals, truly, as Maria says, when we know better, do better, individually as well.
All right, Sarita?
Well, I agree that everything's been said. Rita, I too am sorry that happened. I'm not good at my Spanish. It's a little dusty, but I think the word is te amo.
I love you too.
And that will be it for today, Ms. Barkley.
All right. Well, you guys, thank you so much for providing some insight, much needed insight to the population of people that view our show. BJ, where are we? Kicking It With Kidneys. What's the name of our podcast again? And where our website and all of that stuff? Come on, you guys. Let's pump it up a little bit.
Well, Ms. Barclay, after this segment, don't forget to reach out to me so we can have our debriefing. And it's kickingitwithkidneys.com. And there is no G on kicking it. It's straight Ebonics, K-I-C-K-I-N, it with kidneys.com.
And social media as well, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
Okay. Thank you for joining us on Kicking It With Kidneys, and we look forward to seeing you next week.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Kicking It With Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. See you next week.
The views expressed on this podcast are educational and opinion-based. These are not medical doctors.
Be sure to catch us on social media on our website, kickingitwithkidneys.com, also on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.